Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today I have another one of these multifaceted episodes, I guess we're going to call them for now. I had originally planned on doing a different topic today. I've got a whole other episode all ready to go, but with the spoiling of some new cards from Kawigama Neon Dynasty, I thought a few of them actually deserved some pretty significant looks. And one of cycle in particular that I'm interested in talking about today will be the cycle of the Legendary Channel Lands, which I guess we're calling them for now, as these have generated a lot of buzz with their recent previewing. The one that we're going to talk about first, and arguably the most powerful in the cycle that we've seen so far, is Boseiju Who Endures, a legendary land that taps for a green mana. It also has the ability for channel. One in a green, discard Boseiju Who Endures. Destroy target artifact, enchantment, or non-basic land an opponent controls. That player may search the library for a land card with a basic land type, put it onto the battlefield, and then shuffle. And this ability costs one less to activate for each legendary creature you control. So channel's going to be a very interesting ability to look at. There's going to be a whole cycle from Neon Dynasty of lands that are going to have this ability, presumably one for each color. At the time of recording, we have three, maybe four of these previewed so far, but as I'm set up to record using Scryfall's information, I don't have the black one available quite yet. In addition to Boseiju, we also have in blue, initial translation of Otawara, City Above the Clouds, another legendary land, this one tapping for blue. The channel cost is 3 and a blue, discard this card. Return target artifact, creature, enchantment, or planeswalker to its owner's hand. This ability costs 1 less to activate for each legendary creature you control. And in red, we get Sozinkan, Crucible of Defiance, another legendary land. Tap for red, or channel, 3 and a red, discard this land. Create 2/1/1 colorless spirit creature tokens. They gain haste until end of turn, and once again, this ability costs 1 less to activate for each legendary creature you control. A black one has also been previewed as of today. The effect on that one, I believe, is a raised dead effect with a mana value of 4 on the channel. And the white one, there has been some grainy leaked footage, but no official preview of that one yet. And from what we've seen, that one looks like it is going to be dealing damage, possibly to attacking or blocking creatures. But this cycle is interesting. It's interesting for a number of different reasons. The first of which is that it's basically a spell on a land. Now, this isn't the first time that we've seen something like this. In fact, starting with Zendikar Rising, we saw a number of spells which were modal double-faced cards. I'm going to show a couple little tricks here for using Scryfall. So we're going to look for a modal double-faced card from the set Zendikar Rising. And this is going to show us all of the cards from Zendikar Rising, which fortunately for us, all the MDFCs from that set were lands on the backside. This does pick up the first part of the cycle of the pathway lands, so we can kind of ignore those for our discussion here. But this was one of the initial discussions when we saw Boseiju initially spoiled. How similar is it to these lands that we saw in Zendikar? I will point out that the majority of these, I'm just going to click on Balaged Recovery as our main point of discussion here, are lands that come into play tapped, so it has a fairly significant downside. They also only tap for a single color of mana, which is not a difference than we see with Boseiju here. On the front side, we have a spell, in this case a sorcery, slightly overcrossed regrowth in this point, to be able to return a card from your graveyard to your hand, and regrowth is costing 1 and a green, whereas Balaged Recovery costs 2 and a green. When these were initially spoiled, there was a lot of discussion as to how many lands can I take out of my deck and replace with one of these. The idea being that you would then have the option later in the game, if you were to top deck one of these, it is better than top decking a land because it is potentially a spell action that you can take. Or in other cases, casting a creature, whatever it may be. I run a few of these in quite a few decks, especially low color decks, where I can afford to have a land that only taps for a single color. I run basically all of the Mythic cycle. I'll click on Turn Timber Symbiosis here. The downside to these on the lands is that on the Mythic Cycle, they enter the battlefield tapped unless you pay 3 life. So you literally have to bolt yourself to have it come into play untapped. Just for the potential upside that I can draw this late game and have a big 7 mana spell that could potentially do something much more than just another land. So this was one point of comparison when Busiju and similar lands were being previewed as part of the lead up to Kawigama Neon Dynasty. But it was very quickly pointed out that Channel really does change the math here. Channel is an activated ability. It is not something that you can respond to with a counter spell. In order to interact with that ability, you need to be able to have something that is going to counter an activated ability, of which there are not very many. Let's do a quick search here. So the Oracle text will be activated ability, and we want to have the word counter as part of that. 14 total that I can see here, primarily centered in blue with some green. Yeah, there is not very much here that is really seeing play almost anywhere. Disallow is probably the most played one of these, and even that's not too terribly great. The other reason that this had come up is among CEDH players. I've talked recently about just how powerful rule of law type effects are. Rule of law effects limit you to only playing a single spell a turn. And if you are trying to remove a rule of law piece, if you were to get stopped by casting your spell like a disenchant or a naturalize, well, you're done. You're finished for your turn. You can't back up that spell with counterspell backup. And if you did get stopped, well, you also can't go for it on that turn and try to end the game. These lands, particularly Boseiju here, change that because it is an activated ability, so it would get under rule of law. Let's pull up rule of law just to look at the wording on that one. If you're not familiar with it, it is very simple. For 2 and a white, it's an enchantment where each player can't cast more than one spell each turn. Well, channeling Boseiju is fortunately not casting a spell. Of the ones we've seen previewed officially so far, Boseiju is probably the most powerful. There's a lot of hay being made on whether the non-basic land removal is really something of interest. I personally think it is useful, but I can't argue that it is a real game changer. I actually also think that the overall comparison to a naturalize is fair, but not great. I think it's a little bit closer to something more like Path to Exile, for example. The difference here is you are not getting a basic land into play tapped. Instead, you are getting a land with a basic land type and putting it onto the battlefield, potentially untapped. In CEDH circles, this means that someone will be able to go get their dual lands or their shock lands and just be able to keep on going with what they were doing. It will enter the battlefield untapped. With a shock land, they'll have an option to have it deal 2 damage to them or enter the battlefield tapped, whatever their choice may be. But it allows them to get ahead a little bit. The other question that I think we have to answer while analyzing these lands is, well, what does this mean in terms of our deck building? Do these go into a land slot or do these go into a spell slot? I think the general consensus with the modal double-faced cards from Zendikar has been they are mostly going to be a land slot. I've seen different numbers thrown around, whether it's 3 of these modal double-faced cards are going to be equal to 2 lands in your general land base. I'm not confident enough to say what the correct quote-unquote number should be, but that's an approximate formula that I've been using for myself, and I've been pretty happy with it overall. Just having the small upside that a land you top deck late game, when a land coming into play tapped or untapped, is probably a lot less interesting or meaningful in terms of impact on the game, being able to instead use that to have a spell which can get you ahead or get you back into the game is a lot more valuable. These channel lands are going to be different, though. These channel lands are going to instead... My gut tells me that we should almost be counting these lands as spells, not so much as lands. And that may be wrong. The reason is, these do come into play untapped, which is pretty darn nice. Now, in CDH, the downside is that they only produce a single color of mana, and perfect mana matters a lot in decks where you're trying to go from playing four different colors, double or triple pip spells. That's difficult, particularly if you're going to be playing lands that only tap for a single color of mana. I think they're powerful enough that they will still see play. They may be slightly overhyped overall. So let's do a thought experiment here. Let's take Boseiju as our first example. This one, as long as you control your commander, which will most likely meet the requirement for having a legendary creature, it costs a single green mana to destroy an artifact, enchantment, or a non-basic land, which is potentially hindering you, whether this is a Stax effect, something that is putting its controller really far ahead. Like, of note, channeling Boseiju will not trigger somebody's Mystic Remora or Rhystic Study, because you are not casting a spell. Interestingly, I need to double check this, but I believe it also gets around Grand Abolisher. Yes, it does get around Grand Abolisher, because Grand Abolisher is specifically going to stop opponents from casting spells or activating the abilities of artifacts, creatures, or enchantments. Lands are good to go, which means, unless I'm mistaken, it also gets around Silence. Yes, Silence is only stopping spells cast, so it also gets around that too. And just to cover the trifecta, yes, Ranger Captain of Eos, same thing. It's only going to stop non-creature spells, so you can go ahead and channel right through a Ranger Captain of Eos effect. That is very, very powerful. Full stop. A lot of the nuance is going to come into, well, how are you going to actually play with it when it's time to pull this card out? It's in your hand. When does it go down as a land, and when do you hold on to it for a piece of removal? So let's take a look at another one of them. This is one I am definitely looking to put into the Malcolm and Kedis Polyhorn build that I maintain on the database. So Odawara, City of the Clouds, it's 3 and a blue for a single bounce spell. I've already kind of shown in that deck, I do not mind spending 4 mana for a bounce spell. In those cases, I am running both Blink of an Eye and Into the Royal, because they include a cantrip effect on there, and I'm looking for any chance I can to draw more cards, since I don't have card advantage in the command zone. In that deck, since I'm running Partners, I'm going to have a 2 mana bounce spell, which is the going rate for a lot of those effects that I have in the deck. If I am playing that deck, this is probably not the first land that I play, but if it means the difference between me being able to cast a spell on curve or not, I am probably always going to play Odawara as a land. The calculus changes if I'm able to have Malcolm connect. Remember, Malcolm is going to make a treasure every time it deals damage to an opponent. And if I have Kedis in play, Kedis says that my commanders, when they deal combat damage to one opponent, deal that much damage to each other opponent, thus netting me 3 treasures off of a single combat step. If I have that going and nobody is able to stop the artifact value train that I have there of getting 3 treasures a turn, I'm probably holding on to Odawara. Most likely turn 1 or turn 2 is where I'm considering playing this as a land, versus holding on to it in my hand. Where this really gets spicy is going to be outside of that particular deck, and it's when we combine it with Green's ability to get lands back from the graveyard. And the best example of that is good old-fashioned Life from the Loam. 1 and a green for a sorcery, return up to 3 target land cards from your graveyard to your hand. Now, Life from the Loam is a powerful effect, but it's not exactly a format-defining card, either in Commander or in the smaller CEDH metagame. I also don't necessarily think that this small cycle of, presumably, 5 lands with channel on it will be enough for a deck to build around it. In addition, cards which return lands from your graveyard to your hand are fairly small in number. We have Life from the Loam. We also have Renin 6. Yes, Renin 6 does it as its plus one, so on a two mana Planeswalker. And does Lord Windgrace do it? Let's see. Lord Windgrace does return up to two target land cards from your graveyard, but to the battlefield, not to hand. So it's not necessarily a slam dunk in that deck either. I suspect the pattern of play that we're going to see around these cards is early game, people are going to be playing them as lands and not using them for a form of removal. I think in well-defined metagames, such as the CEDH metagame, there's going to be some very interesting play around whether you're going to be holding onto the card, expecting that one of your opponents will be playing a piece to the board that you will then need to interact with, whether it's being bounced with the blue channel land or being destroyed with the green channel land. I suspect they're going to see play almost without a doubt in low color decks that include that color. I suspect in higher color decks, it is going to be a question of whether the mana base can support it or not. I think the classic Thrasios Timna color pair, so redless, will have very little difficulty supporting it because so much of that deck's early game revolves around green mana, as they're often going to be playing mana dorks to the board to both ramp them ahead and also support the game plan of drawing cards off of Timna. Overall, I think these lands are pretty cool. I think there's going to be a lot of very interesting play around them. I don't necessarily think that they're going to be the end of stacks as we know it, that they're going to be completely changing the way that people play the game just by virtue of having been printed. They're powerful. There's no two ways about it. I run a low-color CEDH deck in Is It with Malcolm and Kedis, and I plan to use both of those channel lands in my deck. Even the red one, where all it does is produce a pair of colorless spirit creature tokens, it's still extra bodies in a deck that has a hard time putting bodies on the battlefield. I'm going to run it. I expect most of the time I'm going to be playing that one as a land just to stay on curve, so it's probably going to replace a mountain in that deck. Time will ultimately tell. I suspect at the end of the day, these are going to, in most decks, wind up being played as lands. The other thing to remember about these is, while green is very good at getting lands out of your deck, it is the best at getting basic lands. It actually has a very hard time tutoring up non-basic lands. The only one that I can think of offhand that gets a land out of your library and into your hand is going to be Sylvan Scrying offhand, and then in colorless, you have options like Expedition Map. And that's really it. There's not very much. I think black is going to have the easiest time taking advantage of these with the unconditional tutors, but even then, the number of times you're going to find yourself tutoring for this as your answer as opposed to something else? I don't know. I guess it remains to be seen. I think that a lot of the hype around these cards is deserved, but I think there is a degree of overhype as well. Let me know what you guys think. I put this episode together fairly quickly just to respond to some of the comments I'd seen out there about these cards, because I do think they're really interesting, and I think there's a lot that's worth discussing about them. But I do not believe, as some people have said, that this is the end of stacks and CEDH, or that it's going to completely change the way the game is played. Tell me what you think, though. You can leave us a message on YouTube, where we are Gemstone Mine Podcast. You can add us on Twitter, where we are Gemstone Mine MTG. Or you can send us an email, where we are gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.